Vaishnava Kunjabi Hari. Punjabi Jai Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari. Punjabi Hari Gopi Jana Balabha Giri Vradhari. Gopi jana balabha giri vradhari. Giri vradhari. Jasaranandana braja jana ranjana. Jasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari. Gopi jana balabha giri vradhari. Gopi jana balabha giri vradhari. Jasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Jasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari. Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa. Hari Vinaka Charanja Asta Tarasata Si Srimadas Divine Grace Isi Bhaktivedanta Swami Shri Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishnavarinda Ki Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Samveda Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Nitai Gopamanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Text 53 from chapter 29. It's entitled Talks Between Narada and King Pajini Bari. Shudram charam samanusam sharane matitva. Raktam sadangri ganasamasu lubdhakarnam. Angre vrakan asuprato viganaya yantam. We have different speeds. Let's go to slow speed. Those of you that are going at a faster speed, slow down. So we can all be at the same. Because it's a little tongue-tying here. Prishte mrigam mrigaya lubdaka bana bhinnam. Excellent. Thank you. Again. Kshudram charam samanasam sharane matitva. Raktam sadangri ganasamasu lubdhakarnam. Angre vrakan asu tripto viganaya yantam. Prishte mrigam mrigaya lubdaka bana bhinnam. Kshudram charam samanasam sharane matitva. Raktam sadangri ganasamasu lubdhakarnam. Agre vrakan asu tripto viganaya yantam. Prishte mrigam mrigaya lubdaka bana bhinnam. Kshudram charam samanasam sharane matitva. Raktam sadangri ganasamasu lubdhakarnam. Agre vrakan asu tripto viganaya yantam. Prishte mrigam mrigaya lubdaka bana bhinnam. Kshudram charam samanasam sharane matitva. Raktam sadangri ganasamasu lubdhakarnam. Agre vrakan asu tripto viganaya yantam. Prishte mrigan mrigaya lubdaka bana bhinnam. Ladies? Raktam sadangri ganasama sulubdhakarnam. Agre vrakan asu tripto viganaya yantam. Prishte mrigam mrigaya lubdaka bana bhinnam. Kshudram charam samanasam sharane matitva. Raktam sadangri ganasamasu lubdhakarnam. Agre vrakan aso tripto vaganaya yantam. Vriste vrakan vragaya lobda kabana bindam. Kshudram on grass. Charam grazing. Samanasam of a beautiful flower garden. Sharane under the protection. Mititva being united with a woman. Raktam attached. Shat angri of bumblebees. Gana of groups. Samasu to the singing. Lubdha karnam whose ear is attracted. Agre in front. Vikran with tigers. Aso tripaha who live at the cost of another's life. Avignaya, neglecting. Yantam, moving. Prishte, behind. Mrigam, the deer. Mrigaya, search out. Lubdhaka, of a hunter. Bana, by the arrows. Binam, liable to be pierced. Translation, my dear king, please search out that deer who is engaged in eating grass in a very nice flower garden along with his wife. That deer is very much attached to his business, and he is enjoying the sweet singing of the bumblebees in his garden. Just try to understand his position. He is unaware that before him is a tiger, which is accustomed to living at the cost of another's flesh. Behind the deer is a hunter who is threatening to pierce him with sharp arrows. Thus, the deer's death is imminent. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Here is an allegory in which the king is advised to find a deer that is always in a dangerous position. Although threatened from all sides, the deer simply eats grass in a nice flower garden, unaware of the danger all around him. All living entities, especially human beings, think themselves very happy in the midst of families, as if living in a flower garden and hearing the sweet humming of bumblebees, everyone is centered around his wife, who is the beauty of family life. The bumblebees' humming may be compared to the talk of children. The human being, just like the deer, enjoys his family without knowing that before him is the factor of time, which is represented by the tiger. The fruitive activities of a living entity simply create another dangerous position and oblige him to accept different types of bodies. For a deer to run after a mirage of water in the desert is not unusual. The deer is also very fond of sex. The conclusion is that one who lives like a deer will be killed in due course of time. Vedic literatures therefore advise that we should understand our constitutional position and take to devotional service before death comes. According to the Bhagavatam 11.9.29, Dabdvasudurdabam idam bahusam bhavante manusham arthadam anityam apihadiraha turnam yateta napatet amamritya yavan nikshreyasaya vishaya kalu sarvataksyat. After many births, we have attained this human form. Therefore, before death comes, we should engage ourselves in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. That is the fulfillment of human life. End of purport. Shudram charam samanasam sharane matit varaktam sadangrigana samasu labdha lubha karanam agre vrikkan asutripto viganaya yantam prishte mrigam mrigaya lubdhaka bana bhinam. My dear king, please search out that deer who was engaged in eating grass in a very nice flower garden along with his wife. That deer is very much attached to his business and he is enjoying the sweet singing of the bumblebees in his garden. Just try to understand his position. He is unaware that before him is a tiger, which is accustomed to living at the cost of another's flesh. Behind the deer is a hunter who is threatening to pierce him with sharp arrows. Thus, the deer's death is imminent. So this is the beginning of an allegory within an allegory within an allegory. It's the previous verse, Narada said at the beginning of the chapter, the previous allegory, the king said, I can't understand all of this. You, because I'm attached to the material conception of life and that makes the mind unsteady and I can't understand. So can you please explain? So he explains. And as discussed yesterday, the intent, it was Narada Muni's intention that along with his instructions, the king would immediately give up all engagement in fruitive activity and take to devotional service. So that's what Narada wants. Prabhupada, one memorable lecture, hearing Srila Prabhupada speaking, he explained it's one of the principal duties of the spiritual master to instruct the disciple in the perils of material life and present the alternative. So detachment from fruitive activity is the force of that the instruction of the spiritual master here, Narada Muni, and even a very qualified person isn't understanding what to speak of us, not so qualified, and not surprisingly, not so fully understanding. So the purpose of yet another allegory is yet the same thing. So the perils of fruitive activity. Sentiment says so many things. Sentiment says, oh, such a nice scene. Imagine you're going for a walk in the forest and you see the scene. There's a deer and another deer and they're eating soft grass and they're hearing this. It's beautiful. Charming, mesmerizing. And one who is observing such a thing in that manner is like the deer himself who is enjoying such a thing in that manner. It doesn't mean to be a spiritual personality you have to be really cold-hearted and don't see anything beautiful. But while looking at something beautiful, what's the beautiful from the transcendentalist's perspective, from Narada Muni's perspective, from the Bhagavatam perspective, is just see how expertly Krishna has arranged for things of this world to charm the living entity into illusion, thinking, oh, this is very nice. But the reality is, that's part of illusion's trick to bring the conditioned living entity, in this case a deer, doesn't have the capacity to realize transcendence, or in our case, having the capacity to realize transcendence, to miss it, to miss the opportunity of human form of life. That's very unfortunate. So the allegory is the deer that's enjoying. So that's the living entity, that's us, enjoying the situations of life. Specifically, it's indicating family life. So the audience in this case is the king who is attached to family life. And for ourselves, some persons may be in family life. Some persons may be in brahmachari life. And so the brahmacharis go, yeah, yuck, yeah. But that's not the teaching that I've understood from our founder Acharya is, what's the phrase? Repulsion is simply the flip side of attachment. You know, spit on it is the flip side of being attached to it. So rather, transcendental knowledge is a position of neutrality where one sees what's what and one isn't either attracted or repulsed. One sees what's what. So we have such an audience, some brahmacharis, we have some grihastas, and let us attempt hearing this to see what's what, to be that kind of detachment that facilitates attachment to Krishna. So one can be in family life and be attached to Krishna. Surprise! One can be attached to Krishna in family life and execute what. So how the Bhaktivinoda Thakur's teachings are sublime in this regard, because he has a grihastha, 10 children, and on worldly duties, was not the detached in the sense of, you know, spit on it, but in the sense of carrying out duties in such a Krishna conscious way that one of his children became a great acharya. And that son, great acharya, said, if I could produce God conscious children, I would produce hundreds of God conscious children. But that's the purpose, not the purpose of attachment and enjoyment. That's the consciousness behind the activity factor. So here's the deer that's in the enjoying mood. So there are different objects. There's the grasses. There's the female deer. There's the bumblebees. And there it's like, it's his garden, is at least the language here. Of course, it's not his garden. It's somebody else's garden. He's in the garden. But his garden, his wife, the female deer, and then the bumblebees, it's explained here, it's metaphorically like the sound of the children. For a renunciate, that sound isn't something attractive. Aside from the crying and screaming and all that, just, you know, the babble, it's not attractive. But for those who, that's their children, it's attractive. And they derive happiness, the smile of the child and the babbling of the child and the whatever it is of the child, because the child is the object of their affection. because of attachment, and then the sounds, whatever they are. And the foods, the satisfaction of the tongue, the satisfaction of, mentioned specifically, the satisfaction of sex enjoyment, husband, wife enjoying, and thinking, because of attachment, this is very nice. And you paint whatever that kind of picture is, whether it's a deer and a female deer, or a family and the family. And so, you know, people hear that and they think, you know, what's wrong with you people? You know, you're inhuman. These things are quite natural. And, you know, how can you have family life without affection for the family members? And so on and so on. And so to get it wrong is easy. To get it right is the challenge. Right now, the message from Narada is the message of detachment. The absence of detachment is because of attachment, and the risk of attachment is time is going to take everything away. And when you're attached, so just takes one something, and you're attached, and that something is taken away. Whatever, you know, think of something that you're attached to and it's stolen from you, or it breaks, or it's somehow smashed. The force of destruction as time energy smashes it. And then what happens? Some family member, your automobile, your wallet, something. I was with a devotee in India many years ago, and he was an austere type of person. We were doing the parikrama around Vrindavan, and he stepped on something, got a cut on his foot, and being, you know, a hero, he just kept going rather than putting some antiseptic on his foot. Well, there are kinds of germs in Vrindavan that got into that cut in his foot. And within about 2 days, his whole leg became double in size. Some infection got inside. And there wasn't a proper hospital in Vrindavan, so we had to take him to Delhi. And in Delhi, you know, it got three times, and he was delirious. And, you know, he took a bath, a shower, you know, before he went to the hospital. And he put his, you know, thing around his, whatever you call that, money belt, and with his passport and his ticket and his everything. And guess what? Someone stole it. And he was delirious, so he didn't even recognize that it had been stolen. And he went to the, and they said, this is very dangerous. You know, we want to send you back. He lived in Connecticut, send you back to Connecticut, but he didn't have his passport, didn't have his money, didn't have his any kind of ID, didn't have his ticket, and in that condition, you know, he was in Vrindavan having a wonderful time, transcendentally wonderful time, but in front was a tiger and behind was a hunter. And it wasn't like he was a sense. He was a very austere person. He still is a very austere person. But not properly attentive. And so I ran around and got the this and that and the other thing and had pay and off he went. You know, the whole thing extra, several thousands of dollars, and went back. And he was in the hospital for in intensive care for over a month. He learned a lesson. You get a cut on your foot in Vrindavan, immediately apply some antiseptic and take proper care of it. And even you're a hero, you take proper precaution. There's a nice lesson for those of you that may go to the Holy Dome. Or, you know, and then living in the material world, it's a perilous place. You don't know what's coming. And it may seem something very innocent, and the next thing you know, it's no longer very innocent. So, it's a precarious situation that we're in our effort to even take up devotional service. What to speak of here's the king, like the deer, not engaged in devotional service yet. He's thinking, I'll do it later. And we hear that mentality, you know, especially, you know, certain people, pious people, that when I get older, I'll do that. That's not advised. That's not what Scripture advises. And here, anyway, so that we should receive the message of transcendental knowledge. Our real identity is not the enjoyer of the facilities that are before us. Those facilities that are before us, which we find to be enjoyable. God is very kind. He's giving us this and that and the other thing. Some persons think in that way. I remember specifically hearing from my parents about that. God gave us and wanted us to enjoy. I mean, it was, you know, be pious, and God gives us things and wants us to enjoy. Their intention wasn't bad, and that's how they thought. And they lived pious. They were pious people. They didn't do bad, I mean, at least from their perspective, sinful things. But implicated, even if some of the stuff was cleaner, you know, what they eat and drank and did and so forth, if that had been changed, still that the position of the real problem is being the position of the enjoyer. Pious enjoyment. That's inherently problematic. One of the punchlines of dealing with or addressing spiritual economics, you've heard that term. One of Prabhupada's disciples wrote a whole big book on it after some 12 years of research and writing and so forth. Spiritual economics. So one of the solutions is to go green. Don't, you know, consume non-renewable energy sources. Find renewable energy sources and consume that. And, you know, non-disposable, get disposable. But, you know, what they don't touch is the consumerism mentality. Even the disposable renewable, there's not enough. And the very nature of somebody else has and I don't have, even in the renewable category, it's envy, and it leads to strife and conflict and war. Because the planet doesn't have enough. There's more, you know, so what's the solution? Just have a war and get rid of a lot of people. Then we have enough. Or one of the programs that I conducted at Illinois Institute of Technology, there were some Chinese students, so I went and spent some time with them. And one of the things that they were expressing is confidence that the government of China was doing the right thing by government-sponsored abortions, because too much population in China, and if they didn't do that, there'd be more than too much population in China. So it's good that they're doing that. It's good. It's good. And, you know, we got a little hostile, a little tense, that it's good. I mean, it's not a, you know, China-America thing. It's a principle thing. Is it good? Do we have the right? And are there some other solutions besides that solution? What about controlling one's senses? What about pursuing God consciousness? And in pursuit of God consciousness, controlling one's senses. The number of births in India exceeds the number of births in China. The population of China is much bigger, but the number of births in China, in India, is much greater. So, and the size of India is smaller. But anyway, aside from different cultures, what's going on today in the world is, it may look like, it makes the deer in the garden eating the fresh grass look nicer. But, to get all of that together, there's many prices to pay that if one doesn't have transcendental knowledge and acceptance of the position of simply serve the personality of Godhead, then it's a life of illusion. The problem is still there, trying to be the enjoyer. So the real solution is letting go of the position of trying to be the enjoyer. Well, the math sounds like it's what you're proposing is be unhappy. Give up the idea of trying to be happy. So what are you doing? You're pursuing unhappiness. Or is impersonalism, be neutral. That's the appearance, at least. And like Krishna said, Arjuna says to Krishna, what if I pursue this path and I'm not successful? This path of yoga that you're describing. I leave this one behind and I don't perfect over there, and so I'm nowhere. I left this and I didn't get there, and so I'm in between this and something and nothing. I'm nowhere. That's not the case. Even if it's incomplete, it's spiritual progress. So the transcendentalist, Narada, and those of us that are assisting, following in the footsteps of Narada, we would like persons to understand the perilous position that they're in, not doomsday kind of talk, but reality kind of talk. And what's the alternative? There is an alternative, and the alternative isn't just suffer or be an impersonalist or spit on material life. The alternative is devotional service, to do each of the things that we do in the mood of attachment to the personality of Godhead. But it's to get somebody to go there, sometimes it's necessary to help them understand clearly the peril of continuing to be a fruitive enjoyer in the realm of devotional service. We could use a strong dose of that. Don't try to be a sense enjoyer or the other kind, subtle enjoyer, mind enjoyer of the position of being a servant of Krishna. That's not what service of Krishna is. There's perils in striving like that. Rather, of course, the advocacy has come to your constitutional position. If that's not advisable, what's advisable? It's very similar to the position that Narada took with Magari. When he got Magari to the position of understanding what my life has been made up of is very perilous, what do I do? What's my alternative? So that's where this transcendental knowledge leads to. It's not impersonalism or animosity towards material energy or things that are of this world. Repulsion of sense objects. Repulsion of sense objects is not the position that's recommended. Seeing all things in relation to Krishna, and thus that they are meant to be used in service to Krishna, That's the advocacy. So, two things remaining: this metaphor of the deer enjoying. The whole topic is about fruitive activity. In front is death, and behind, is time that destroys everything. And behind is a hunter. So we're going to hear the next verse. The hunter is the superintendent of death. When killed, superintendent of death takes those that have not properly heeded the message of devotion to Krishna. The superintendent of the human form of life is meant for that. Having neglected that, there's a consequence. And the Lord of death is the consequence. One is punished commensurately with how one has misused this human form of life. So, what should we do? We should properly use the human form of life and assist Narada in a wake-up call. And he has a big arsenal, lots of little pistols and bazookas and cannons and aircraft, and he's got a whole artillery, array of things that he can release to help persons understand and take the position of transcendental life. So we should also compassionately look at how he's doing and remember the things that he's take inspiration from Narada's example and try to assist others. Of course, everything is wrapped up very nicely within transcendental literature, within the books of the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust. So we like to give that opportunity to others. We dedicate ourselves in that way. And Prabhupada ends the purport by quoting a verse from the 11th canto. Labdva sudurlabham idam bahusambhavante. This is one of those phrases, as I was mentioning yesterday, that sometimes Prabhupada would take and repeat and repeat and repeat. This was not like the top of the list, but one of the verses that he would refer to. Labdva, having obtained sudurlabham, this very rarely achieved, durlabham and sudurlabham, the human form of life. Idam is thus. So, thus having obtained the human form of life, bahu sambhavante. We're given a very special opportunity. Someone gives you $1 million. It's a very special opportunity. Now, what are you going to do with it? And depending upon the consciousness behind the individual, they're going to do something with it. Misuse it or properly use it or just look at it. Prabhupada speaks of a miser as one who, they don't use their wealth. They just like looking at it. And then they count it. And then they put it over there and feel some happiness. And then they get it out again and count it again and put it over there. And they think, one housewife was describing, that's what my husband does. He doesn't use it for the family. He doesn't use it for Krishna. He just likes to look at it and count it and think, how can I get some more? And then he goes out and does something, gets something more and puts you know, and counts it again. And that's his life. Miser. Or, you know, misuse it. In so many ways to misuse. And there's this saying, a fool and his money are soon parted. It's taken. But if it's properly used, then it has great value. So the human form of life, the sudurlabham, manasa janma, The human form of life is very, very special. Misused, it's like the deer chasing after happiness, and properly utilized, it's a means of achieving success of the soul's journey in so many species of life since time immemorial. The same set of sense objects out there, so it's not spit on them, it's utilize them in the proper way, direct them in some way or another in service to Krishna. That's the art of practicing devotional service, whether one is a brahmachari or a grihastha. The very nice verse of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya speaks of Lord Chaitanya. He wrote a number of verses in glorification of Lord Chaitanya, and one of them, two of them, are found specifically in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where he says, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya writes, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the gift of Jnana Vairagya. So through, but it's not the ordinary jnana, and not the ordinary vairagya. The ordinary jnana is, I am spirit soul, like the previous purport said. There are yogis that think, yes, spirit soul, super soul, they're the same. I'm God. Not that kind of jnana, because that's mistaken. But the knowledge of, yes, we're not this body, but as spirit soul, we're part and parcel of the Supreme Soul, exactly as is said in Bhagavad Gita. Mam evang sajiva loke, jiva bhuta sanatana. The living entities are eternally my fragmental angsa, part and parcel. And as the part of the Supreme, we're meant for service to the Supreme. And with that, detachment from the position of being the enjoyer. It's not my identity. My position is being the servant of the Supreme. So here's this big world. Just like our Sankirtan devotees do. Think of, or as Prabhupada did with our temples. We go to places where there's lots of people. And lots of people are there for sense gratification reasons. So we go fill temples where there's lots of people and give them Krishna consciousness. Doing that, there's risk. But live in the world and there's risk. Go to the forest and there's risk. Stay in your home, there's risk. Go out and meet people, there's risk. There's risk. Choose your risk. But if your mission is being and giving Krishna consciousness, there's protection from that risk. So we go to places where people congregate with their objective of sense gratification and give Krishna consciousness, chant the holy name, give prasadam, invite people to the temple, give them transcendental literature, engage them in one means or another or all of them in devotional service, and gradually purify so they can come to understand like King Prajini Bari did. Eventually he got it. He accepted pure devotion, the position of pure devotional service as the goal of his life. Took a lot of chapters to get him there, but he got there. Okay, so I'm going to end, see if there's any discussion. Behind you. Go ahead. No, you.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
I was thinking in the beginning of the class, you quoted Prabhupada and you said that he said detachment is
I can't hear you. Somewhere in between too much and too little. Maybe we can point the speaker that way. Ah, now try it. Go ahead, try again. Hold it right up here. Keep speaking, because then he can adjust the volume.
You quoted Prabhupada in the beginning of your class, and you said that Prabhupada mentioned once that repulsion to something material is a like flip side of attachment. So I'm not getting it that how can, if one is like detached to something material, so is it like some kind of attachment because like he is too or she is too detached to that thought? So is that person attached to that thought actually?
I got about 40%. You got it?
Since aversion or repulsion is the other side of attachment,
yeah.
I'm not sure how that is the case. If someone is repulsed, how are they attached to that idea?
Okay, that's your question? Ah, okay. My sense is, if this is the mentality of a person who is attached, because I'm attached and I recognize this is awful, I'm identifying on the material platform and thinking, oh, this is awful. Let's say some person comes to Krishna consciousness and they're a student. And they start to think, oh, this is a waste of time. You know, I just want to do devotional service. It's a waste of time. It's an incomplete understanding of whatever that something is. Maybe it is useless, maybe it's useful, but it's not just because it's not, it can be also devotional service. I can engage myself in this or that or the other thing as devotional service, but not having a clear understanding. The repulsion is actually, I want to cast far away my contaminations of attachment, and I'm trying to get rid of them, and so it's just the flip side of attachment. Or maybe one that's easier, because that's something that you do. You know, there's a young brahmachari, young man joins the temple, and he thinks, oh, women are disgusting because women are just Maya, and you know, I'm a man, and so women are Maya, and so yuck. But it's not that women are Maya, it's my attraction for women is Maya. So it's the flip side of his own attachment that he's thinking like that. You know, I see women and I spit. Because she's Maya. It's my attachment. Now let's take a transcendentalist, our founder Acharya, and he sees, you know, there are different persons that want to engage in devotional service. How wonderful. Whether they're in this dress or that dress, a woman's body or a man's body. The soul being attracted to Krishna, that's wonderful. So not out of attachment or detachment, but out of attachment to Krishna. So attachment to Krishna is the solution to attraction and repulsion of sense objects. We'll take another example. You got it? Okay. I can give you some other examples. But okay. Someone else? Nityananda Prabhu?
We just observed Janmashtami.
Yeah.
And one of the opportunities at Janmashtami or requests is to help the temple financially. And there are many grahasthas who are not just newcomers to Krishna consciousness, but I would say committed because they're initiated or they've expressed that commitment. But somehow they seem to be the most tight-fisted when it comes to donating for the wider cause of spreading Krishna consciousness. So either they are well-intentioned but don't know how to, or they're bad at their own financial planning, or perhaps very attached, not knowing all the intricacies of it. Yet, in their daily habits, they have all the fancy gadgets and expensive cars, etc. So I'm requesting help in how to see it, and what can I do, or what can we do to help them move from that position to a different position?
Two things come to mind immediately. One is show by example, and those that are capable, encourage them to show by example. And then another is training and education. Go over what Yukta Vairagya means, you know, as many times as you need to do that. We'll go back to one of these other examples of, say, you know, a brahmachari that hears the message. I just spoke about aversion is the flip side of attachment, and they hear it and they still remain averse. And if they continue to go along that path of aversion, 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 they're going to end up in the soup, because that's not the position of transcendental detachment, aversion. So what to do? You show by example and continue to train and educate, and some persons aren't going to learn. But you know, those that have the capacity, at least, you train and educate. I suppose the third thing is give various opportunities where someone who's a little tight-fisted might be inspired to be more generous. I'm thinking of a time I was visiting in Houston, maybe it was 10 years ago. They asked me, can you give some talks on grihastha life, the duty of a grihastha? So I was thinking, that's interesting, asking a brahmachari or a sannyasi to give lessons on the duties of a grihastha, but okay. So I started to do some research, and practically universally it was charity. As with, you know, that's the, you know, number one thing. As with the brahmachari, sacrifice of the hearing process. It doesn't mean that the grihastha doesn't have to sacrifice the hearing process. They should do that also. But number one is, because they're in touch with the material energy, they must do that as grihasthas. They must earn to take care of their household duties, their family, etc. How to properly execute the duties of being in touch with wealth. It's being charitable. It's not just, you know, as you said, financial. So I spent, they wanted a four-day seminar, if I forget the circumstances, and so for 4 days, it was just that one point, in different ways, in different ways, in different ways. And my goal was not, you know, let's fill up the treasury of the Houston Temple. It was so they could understand what their duty is. And similarly, it may look like, if you're doing that, the purpose, your intention is to fill up the treasury of the temple. The purpose rather is to help them fulfill their duties properly, because if they don't get it, then it's, you know, like King Prachinibari. He'll die a pious man and everything will be taken from him and take another birth. And who knows what condition, because that's not what the purpose of life is to guard, jealously guard one's resources as a pious devotee. That's not the purpose. There's another purpose, and there's a protection to help fulfill that purpose. So, you know, it takes being very expert and very pure, like Narada. And it may take a long time for the persons who are tight-fisted to release their hold a little bit. But that third item is fine, perhaps. It's different people have different things that inspire them, and some you hit the right item that inspires them, and they may become more generous. Here's another. Involve them in devotional service that's, you know, related to the temple, and then it's their service, and then maybe they'll be more generous because it's their service. Who knows? You know, engage in deity worship, or engage in festivals, or engage... Go, whatever you want to do here. Do we have a deadline because of the Padbilikan parade? What time do we have to end?
Some of the devotees were going to leave between 8:30 and 9.
Between 8:30 and 9. Okay, so we'll take two or three questions and end.
Maharaj, on the point of not being an enjoyer in the realm of devotional service, I was trying to understand the principle of amanina, manadena, not desiring any respect for oneself. Because one of the principles of our philosophy is to always show respect to others, like Prabhupada's language, no one should be neglected, comes to mind. So how does the devotee not, how is he not disturbed if he's, because he knows that's a principle.
How to be not disturbed if?
If he's not shown respect, or how does his mind not, because it's a principle that we should strive for, so if he doesn't receive it, I'm wondering what the principle is that he's able to not be affected.
Well, I have a suggestion. Be a manager for a while and see what that's like. And, you know, you'll learn quickly about not expecting respect. And I'm laughing, but, you know, that's the way it works. As soon as you have a position, it's like those programs, sideshows in festivals or carnivals. They put somebody in a chair that's above a vat of water, and you persons buy, you know, a chance to throw a softball and hit the target, and you hit the target, and the person dunks in the water. And then everyone cheers when they get dunked in the water and they come back out and sit in the chair again. Management is something like that. And everybody's very eager to step up and, you know, take their throw at the manager or the target that it says, you know, you win, and they get dunked in the water. And you're just sitting there doing your managing service, knowing that that's the program. Are there persons at least that have that mentality as soon as you take that position? And there's more serious, I mean, that's true, but a more serious answer is, a more scripturally grounded answer is, one will not be able to achieve that, amanina, manadena, as long as they're holding on to the bodily conception of life. Or, to achieve that, you have to be in the spiritual conception of life. Or you won't be able to sustain it. It's on the platform of the mind, but not on the platform of the soul, unless you're in the spiritual conception of life. So on the platform of the mind, I'm trying to be, but then there's some prick that comes, and then it's ouch, and I react, or my mind reacts, because I do have this expectation of respect because it hasn't gone to the soul platform yet. And then, you know, that's not natural for the soul. It's unnatural for the soul. And trying with the mind only to be humble, tolerant, offering respect, not receiving respect, do that on the platform of the mind. It's not sustainable. I have to get to the platform of the soul. And acting in devotional service from the platform of the soul. So, become a pure devotee, then it's possible. And until then, it's practice. And strive for purity. Read the Jad Bharat description. He wasn't reacting when Rahugana was, you know, letting him have it, flaunting himself around saying, you know, you better watch out, I'm King Rahugana. And you better carry this palanquin properly or you're in big trouble. I'm the king and you're the servant, so behave properly. He didn't say anything until the king lost it again. And anyway, read what Jad Bharat says and to the king. And you can become absorbed, you know, without speaking anything, just being in transcendental consciousness. But without transcendental consciousness, it's untenable. Someone else? I saw a hand over here. Okay, over here. You get the last question.
The place of honor. Thank you.
Hope it's a good one.
Well, let's see if it is.
Okay, we'll find out. You're in the hot seat now.
What is the impact over time of a person doing the right thing with the wrong motive, as well as doing the wrong thing with the right motive? You know, these two different circumstances.
They suffer, and others suffer.
And a sincere person doesn't want to suffer and doesn't want to see others suffer, and so they hit the reset button saying, okay, what went wrong here? And you consult scripture, and you consult super soul, and you consult senior devotees, and you recalibrate, and so you get it the right thing in the right way, with the right motive. Isn't that what we do? And the proper assumption is, it's one of those sets of things. You just gave two, and there's others that don't get it right. So the main like nectar devotion, the eligibility of a candidate for devotional service. You know that chapter? There's a chapter in nectar devotion. The eligibility for getting the right thing in the right way with the right purpose is the sincere desire to get there. Combined, so then Krishna will send the resource. But if I'm not sincere, you know, I want to do it my own way. And I, you know, even if I knock people over doing the right things, you know, my mind, doing the right thing, it's the right thing. Just ask me. So we need to, the main thing to look for is our sincerity, and are we properly aligning ourselves with the resources that Krishna has sent? Is our heart open to receive that descending mercy that Krishna is providing? And otherwise, I'll continue to do the wrong thing in it, you know, all these other combinations of getting it wrong. Sincerity. Krishna sends resources, receiving them with an open heart and being ready in a humble mood to correct myself, to accept that mercy, and act according to that indication.
That's called devotional service in practice. And keep practicing like that. Okay, we're going to end. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.